Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's a Monday brunch and we're having fun. We're hanging out. It's a beautiful day. It's May. I don't know. Who knows when this is coming out? Sometimes you just never know with us. We just kind of record them.
We just like to do it.
But we're back on track. We've been doing a few of these. We will pick a classic album. We love music. We believe that sometimes albums of the 80s, 90s, 2000s can be viewed the same sentimental way that some of these movies can. 100%. So we put up a vote for the old Patreon. It was my turn to pick an album. I couldn't pick. I said, I'm just going to let these Patreon people choose for me. So I gave them the choice between these five albums. I said, just scroll down here. I gave them Pearl Jam 10. Mm-hmm. I gave them Green Day, Dookie, Metallica, Black Album, Korn self-titled, and Santana, Supernatural.
Oh, bad.
Green Day Dookie obviously won with 37% of the vote. Next was Pearl Jam 10. Next Metallica. Next Korn. And only with a few votes, Santana Supernatural. I think we would have had a good time talking about Santana Supernatural.
Let's be honest. I mean, it's only the great one has one of the greatest song of all time. So it's fine.
Don't worry. When it's AJ's choice for an album, I think he's just going to straight up pick it.
It was the first album that I ever bought as a young lad.
Mine was MC Hammer. Please Hammer Don't Hurt Him.
Wow.
Vinyl.
Dang.
Still have it.
Mine was a Beach Boys cassette that I just liked to hold. I didn't listen to it.
Sounds about right.
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, we got to talk about Green Day's Dookie. First of all, what are your initial memories of this? This, for me, I was roller skating in my friend's basement in 1994, and we used to listen to like CNC Music Factory and stuff like that for our skating dance parties. One day, the older girl popped in Green Day Dookie. Never heard of a band called Green Day. Never heard of this album, and it struck me. It was like one of my first influences into being like, oh, rock and roll. What is this? Like, you know, like punk, what? Mm. This polished, edgy version of music that I had never heard before. It was a unique sound to me. I had never heard anything like it, and I was a giant fan. I immediately made my mom go out and buy this album for me.
Oh, yeah.
And it was influential. I had started playing drums in 92. And so I had just now started 2 years later to like getting the ability to kind of be able to play songs. I was playing along to Phil Collins and Van Halen on my parents' CDs. This was the first one of my choosing that I was like, I'm going to learn how to play these songs. So yeah. Green Day Dookie's a big one for me.
Yeah, I remember driving to my mom's taekwondo appointment. She taught taekwondo like once every week or something like that. And we'd always listen to the radio, and I heard one of these songs on there. And that is the extent of my history with Dookie, because I've never listened to this all the way through except till now.
Damn.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's exciting.
I had a friend, a lot of my friends like to skateboard, you know? And so, but one friend in particular, like, was just a huge Green Day fan. I really didn't know much about him. He was older than I was. And, but they'd like play it while they were skating and stuff. And then I remember getting this, like, by the time I listened to this album, it was the era of like burning your own CDs. Mm-hmm. Dude, I had like Dookie was just like, it was a burn CD, and it, I don't even think it was like all done the right way. It was just a lot. It was like most of the songs from Dookie.
Yep.
That was it. And so that's what I remember about it, honestly.
Well, this will be fun.
I loved it.
Yeah, this is coming from a guy who like obsessed over it to maybe two dudes that who knows how much you checked it out. This will be a fun little way to check this album out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
If you know much about Green Day, they had released two albums before this, 39 Smooth and then Kerplunk. Kerplunk's actually a decent successful album that brought them into some modest success. But Dookie was the one that really sent these guys into the stratosphere. They originally were going to call it Liquid Dookie. The phrase was inspired by their experiences with getting the shits on tour due to terrible diets. I think we've all probably been there. But according to the Behind the Music episode, the full title was Too Gross. And that's what's actually kind of funny, because Dookie obviously meaning shit, but Dookie's kind of like a funny, like, ah, Dookie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, but if you called it Liquid Dookie, I think that gets a little weird.
It's very, very punk, you know, like
yes.
of the highest regard. It is just like, yeah, we'll get into it as we get to the track listing and everything, but it's just so like skateboarder kind of culture, it seems to me anyway.
The cover's very much that way for me, yeah.
Released February 1st, 1994 by Reprise Records, the album Dookie won a Grammy Award for Best Alternative Album in 95. Worldwide success peaking at number 2 in the Billboard charts in the United States. It sold over 20 million copies worldwide. It is the band's obvious best-selling album and one of the best-selling albums of all time, been labeled by critics and journalists as one of the greatest albums of the 90s, one of the greatest punk rock and pop punk albums of all time. Rolling Stone placed Dookie on 3 iterations of its 500 greatest albums of all time list. Number 1 on its 50 greatest pop punk albums. In 2024, the album was selected for preservation in the United States National Recording Registry by the Library of Congress as being culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant.
Mm. It makes sense.
I mean, yeah. Number 65 on the all-time list of selling albums, outselling Britney Spears' Oops, I Did It Again, Def Leppard Hysteria, and Oasis' What's the Story, Morning Glory.
Wow.
What do you think about this album art?
I love it. I think it's... Like I said, it's just skateboard culture and punk aesthetic to a T. I think it's just like counterculture all in one. Mm-hmm. Like what the album is actually saying, I guess, if it's saying anything other than just like whatever.
Yep.
Pretty much. I like the drawing of it. It looks like a kind of a Sunday morning, Saturday morning kind of cartoon in the paper kind of thing. And it's Bombs of Dookie. It's funny and sarcastic and kind of fuck you at the same time.
And iconic. It's just like nothing else looks like that, right?
It reminds me of something like that, like let's say like Gabe's, right? Like a punk venue or something. It reminds me of something that somebody got like probably like wicked stoned or something, went into the bathroom and basically got lost, but just started drawing this on like the stall wall. That's what this kind of reminds me of. That's the vibe that I get from this. Is they just kept going and it kept getting like weirder and weirder for this person. And like that's honestly like the vibe I get. And it's also funny because I know I spent like a lot of time just like looking at the album, just like kind of picking out other little things.
It's like a Where's Waldo.
What people are doing. Yeah. And so I would just kind of keep picking it out. So yeah, that's what I get from
it. I mean,
it.
This is the era of owning physical copies of music, where just the art of holding it in your hand and reading lyrics and reading thank yous was such a big deal. But then this took it to the next level, because I remember studying that and just being like, oh, look at that guy. Look at that guy in there. Like it made you hold on to that cover so much longer to stare at things. And I remember trying to like redo a drawing like that. Like, I'll just do all these funny things. And like, I'm a terrible artist, so it looked terrible. But yeah, that was done by Richie Bucher. Apparently, he also would like did some illustrations for like Sesame Street and stuff like that. Like, that's how he's most well known.
Wow.
He drew that whole thing. But they had 4 singles for this: Longview, Basket Case, Welcome to Paradise, When I Come Around. I think we got to chat about this. You want to roll through?
Well, produced by Rob Covello, also did Linkin Park, My Chemical Romance.
Oh, that's right.
Eric Clapton, Beth Hart, Goo Goo Dolls, Dave Matthews Band, Kid Rock, Alanis Morissette, Black Sabbath, Phil Collins, Paramore.
So he's kind of influential.
Yeah, it's just like in a multiple Grammy winners. Yeah, with those artists, yeah, I think you got some.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they did talk
about aesthetically, it sounds perfect.
They said that they knew they wanted to make that. Like they just had this vision of polishing their stuff up and really making it have a punk edge to it, but produced well.
Yeah.
And they knew they didn't want to fall into a trap of being in the studio of spending 6 months recording it and writing it. I think sounds like they were very prepared. Songs written for the most part. It took them what, like 2 weeks, 2 months, something like that in the studio to fully do everything. I mean,
it sounds like to me anyway. I'm not sure that they just did it all live.
Oh, I'm sure they probably
like
did.
They were
right?
Just all in, because I can't imagine. I was thinking while listening to it, I can't imagine what's his name, Billy Joe Armstrong. Playing or singing these songs without playing the guitar also.
Yes. Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? Like
they kind of have to happen together.
Yeah. It almost seems like it would be impossible to even like come up with the lyrics if not just like jamming and playing the song to yourself, I guess. I don't know. That's the way it seems to me. I'm not sure about that, but
yeah, I was reading up about it and everything. And I think they were one of the first, you know, Green Day at this point, they were like one of the first bands or ones that reference very often, like them and Pearl Jam and Powell. They didn't want to conform and jump into the studio or do that or sell out, you know? And obviously that came around to kind of bite them, I think, even after this album.
Yeah, everyone hated them because now they're successful.
Yeah, now you've got success.
They're doing the same thing, but now they're successful, so we hate you.
Yeah, now somebody else who didn't hear their first two albums heard this one, and now I don't like them because now they're becoming more accessible to people that maybe I don't like. Thanks a lot. thanks for your support. But like they didn't want to go into a studio. They didn't want to.
Be rock stars,
right? Right.
That trend from the '80s of like, yeah, we lived in a house for a year and wrote this album,
right?
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's just record it. They're from the indie world. Like, let's just go record it.
A good producer to. Record our punk songs and make them sound good, and that made it more accessible to people. Sorry
for doing that.
I
think the sonically of why this still sounds so good to me is like it's so hard to make punk music sonically pleasing to me sometimes. Yeah. You know, like
it can get repetitive
but that's the idea behind punk is like it's just raw bleh. but sometimes when I go back and listen to some of my favorite bands from like my college years, I'm just like, oh god, like sonically you're just kind of like it just doesn't sound good. I'd rather see this live than listen to this album.
Sure.
But that's what this album kind of did, is it took that grittiness but it made it like tangible to the public, to where just some dude who just likes rock and roll could be like, oh wow, this is pretty good. Yeah. And your mom could be like, oh, because I used to always play music for my mom to be like, come on, you like this? Like, you want to check this Korn album out? And she would listen to most and be like, oh, that's pretty good. You know, like I think I remember her listening to a few of these and saying, yeah, that's wow, pretty good band. You know, I heard you playing drums to that. That was fun. But the mix for me is unique because the vocals are in this weird spot sonically. They're not here on top where like pop music usually lives or even like modern day rock music, but they're not buried where like a lot of times indie and punk lives. It's just like in the middle somewhere where they're there, but they're so easily like 2 more dB down and they would maybe be almost like out of the mix.
I think that's why I question that like maybe they did this kind of live and he played guitar and sang at the same time. Because the guitar and his voice are really kind of synonymous with me, to be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, especially like with the singles, which we'll get to, is I think maybe they'll take his voice up a little bit from the guitar.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Maybe, but with like all these like punk songs, especially like these first three songs, it is very just like he's almost like playing the rhythm of the guitar and singing the rhythm at the same time with just like a little bit of inflection for melody, you know? Yeah.
It's very defining. Mm-hmm. You know, it is. It's very defining because it doesn't, that changes very much so if you have to separate those two out. I don't know. I think you're right. I think I don't think you would have the same, it wouldn't be the same if it was, if they had four members at that time, you know, like they eventually did.
Of course. Yeah.
But it's the stress and the anxiety of that, of like having only three members, that makes you work harder, makes them work harder.
Fill more space
to fill more air, and find the right ways to do that.
Yeah, yeah. I'm glad you said that too, because I've been weirdly listening to bands lately that are like four pieces, like Converge is a four piece band. And when the guitarist is doing like a lead line, there won't be like another track that's doing a rhythm guitar. It's just the bass, because it's that prominent. And I believe that in this mix as well.
Where, dude, the bass is like,
you don't need a rhythm guitar to do anything when Billy Joe is just doing like a lead line. That bass guitar is a character of in itself.
Yeah, Mike Dern's bass is
big, man. And it's pumped in the mix too. It's like, mm-hmm. It's right there. It's a rhythm guitar. It's so full.
Mm-hmm. They really do a great job of really pulling that middle high, so that way it kind of blends with the guitar in a sense, but still has that's where you get that pluck, that twang, flange from that bass that really pops, but it's still somehow you're not losing the low end that's required of a bass guitar,
right.
You know, it's very interesting.
Let's jump into the tracks here. Track one is Burnout. I love that this wastes zero time.
Yeah, God, right into it.
And that's what you need. You almost needed that to like, so the punkers would still love it, especially these first three songs being like,
yeah,
being very punk.
Dude, I think it's kind of brilliant what they did in placing Longview fourth on this, because these three songs don't go over 3 minutes, none of them.
No, the runtime's like 34 minutes on this entire album.
I think most of the singles maybe even like just reached 3 minutes, and it's kind of really fucking genius to have like, it's a skate album. Like skate albums, you just kind of put on in the background so you can skate to them, you know? And then we'll get to like at the end of track three, Chump, is like, oh, well, no, we're taking punk to a different level now, you know?
Yeah. I just love how these songs just waste no time. And it really, like, I'm not a guitar player. I can play guitar. But it's so impressive to me, Billy Joe's playing on this album and singing on top of it. I don't know how you feel about it as a guitar player, but, like, I mean, he's downstroking a lot of times, and he's quick. I know we're just talking about bar chords and stuff, but
it's just Ramon stuff.
Yes, but the ability to play that quickly, changing it up, being the only guitar, the most prominent guitar in the band, and then to also sing along to it. Like these songs really show that well.
Yeah, I definitely agree. It's really impressive to me. Like I would get so bored with, you know, the same four chords, and I'm sure it's not exactly the same four chords over and over again, but it's the way he's putting them together, which is like, what the fuck, man? How are you doing this? How are you making Having a Blast sound different than Burnout? Because it's really essentially the same song,
but they sound totally different. Yeah.
And that's the thing. It's defined by like what he wants to do. I don't believe that there's any mimic of any kind going on. Like, it's not overthought. And maybe that's what I'm trying to say. It's not overthought of what he's trying to accomplish, because he knows that he can rely on like Mike probably to fill in around on his bass or help boost whatever he's doing on the bass, you know? And, again, it's the idea that he's got the singing down, and he's just got to fill in with that guitar. I hate to say it this way, it almost doesn't matter what happens on that guitar. It's the fact that it does happen, and it happens the way that he does it.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's nothing else kind of like it. I don't know.
Well, in these three songs, you get introduced to Trey Cool. I mean, Trey Cool was very, very influential on like modern rock drummers coming up through the 90s because of his creativeness, but also like just really, if I think about it personally, for me, his single stroke roles. His single stroke, like everything's single strokes really quickly around the kit and for fills. And that is like, you didn't necessarily hear much of that in mainstream music at this point. Mm-hmm. And like Trey Cool is still one of my faves.
I love the sound of the snare in this album too.
Dude.
It's almost piccolo.
Kind of.
Not quite. It's so punchy and prominent. Every time he hits it, it's like, oh, that's so great. It just sounds so good.
When they were getting ready to go in and do this uh, like, you know, prepping for this album, and they met after kind of some of their demos, and they went out to like this bar or whatever. And Trey Cool wasn't even old enough to drink. You know, he was still like 20 years old or something. He was still young. And, you know, he's such an influential drummer, I think, considered nowadays, and what he does and how fast he can play and do things and make it coherent. I think that's rare in punk music.
Yep.
You know, personally, I'm not the most fluent, like, in punk rock per se. I'm not going to say that I am by any means, but I do think that can get kind of rare in punk music.
It's so hard to play those beats.
Yeah. Sometimes people just play them fast because they can't do it any other way.
Right.
Yeah. You know what I mean? And I don't believe that with Trey Cool.
Yeah.
You know, he does it because he knows what he wants to do.
You talked about this in Chump, Sean, this is a great song. Maybe my favorite of the three, of these first three, maybe Burnouts.
Yeah.
But how Chump ends.
Yes.
That no one does. No one did that in like punk music.
It almost does like a prog ending.
Yes.
I just think it's fucking brilliant. Like it is like, yeah, this is, we've been making the music that you just skate to at the skate park. And then,
pretty cool, right?
And then, here's more of it for sure. But then here's a radio song right into it, man. It is, I think it's fucking genius.
But do you think that this, there's those rare moments in time where they're like media gets it right. They somehow latch onto something and are like, this is weird and unique. I think people might like it. Cause Longview, that's not a radio song.
Yeah, you're right.
Like that's just a weird fucking, what is Longview? Like Longview to me is, it's the Hey song. I used to play that. That's the one of the first drums. Like he swears in it. There's guitar doesn't come into the chorus. It doesn't feel like a hit. But it is because we know it as one now, right? Like, I don't know what people would have thought about this when it first came out.
True. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, it's an interesting thing because, yeah, I don't think they intended to write songs to be on the radio.
Oh, no.
But obviously somehow they worked their way in, like you're saying. And I don't know. I think they might have just been onto something where they're just like, this is a different thing now.
A unique sound.
Yeah, we want to do something different with punk rock.
I think it made something... just a personal, very, very personal like aspect of that, I guess. This was like a bass line that I had to learn how to play. Like when I was playing bass and guitar.
You have to. This is a drum beat and a bass line that everyone has to learn how to play.
You have to learn to play that. If you play bass or if you have a bass guitar, then like you better be able to play like this and like some Sublime and like
they're sound check songs.
Exactly. and that was like a big deal. And I think I think if I take it one step further, I think it's one of those things that inspires other people to want to play this or you want to make something like it. And I think that's why people latch on to this song so heavily, because it's like it's like slow enough that you can latch on and learn and then really enjoy it, I think. And then obviously like the chorus will kick in and I don't know. I think it's a really, I love playing the bass line still. It's super fun.
And this is, keep in mind, this is 12-year-old Mike trying to listen to a song where they say masturbation in it and like fucking lazy. So it's the moment where you're listening to these songs and you're like, going down. are you like, your mom's like, what do you listen to? Oh, we'll skip this song. You know which songs are the ones that don't have the swear words.
I'll buy you the CD, but as long as it's from Walmart, because it's all bad words.
I can't do that. I do want to know what your favorite songs are. I'm not going to call this my fave, but Welcome to Paradise is a fucking awesome song.
Yeah. Of course.
I think it's amazing.
I think it was the third set. Longview was the first single, then Basket Case, then Welcome to Paradise, then When I Come Around. This was always one of my favorite ones to play on drums.
I think just the hook in this is undeniable. Like you could do that in like a band that I don't like, and you could do that kind of hook, and I'm like, oh, that's, I love it. There's something about that hook where it's just like, I don't know. Like I keep saying, it's undeniable.
And the breakdown.
Yeah.
With the bass feature.
Again, a little proggy. Yes. Fucking weird with it.
And I have to imagine like some of that comes from Mike Dirnt.
Of course.
You know, obviously in this aspect because it's that bass guitar. But watching that, I remember hearing this song, but I think very shortly after I did get to watch the music video and watching them play it like live. It's because the music video is like them playing it live or covering a couple different sets that they play. And it's just like rocket fuel, man. It is like think of that punk venue with a stage, with a real stage. And I mean, people just jumping up on stage, jumping off, crowd surfing, mm-hmm. jumping into it. Like they're just all over the place. And finally you have that bass yep. break and like Mike Dern just looks like demented, dude. It's just, and it's amazing. And it made me love this song even more because watching them play it in that element.
Did you ever see footage of them playing at Woodstock 94?
Yeah,
I don't think
that's
so.
Not the 99 one, but the one they did for the, I guess the 20 year anniversary or 25 year anniversary or whatever. That was the year that it was all gross and rainy and
yeah.
And that's when everyone was throwing mud at him on mm-hmm. stage. Billy Joe had like royal blue hair.
Yeah.
This song in particular at that set was like when shit went wild. Like when it was just mud, just
really
pelting them on stage. Type that in, just like Green Day, Woodstock 94 or something like that. It's awesome. God. It is awesome. Jeez. Like pure chaos. Not 99 chaos, but a different kind of chaos.
A little lighthearted chaos.
A little bit more lighthearted, right?
Sure.
I think if I had to skip a song, if you had to pick a least favorite, it's probably Pulling Teeth for me.
Which is the one where it's kind of more almost like 60s influence?
I think it's Pulling Teeth.
This is one of my favorites.
Okay, cool. No, it's because it's very different than the rest of the album.
Yeah, I enjoy this. It's
because coming from like the three punk songs into like the two, like we didn't know at the time, I guess, or people didn't know at the time when it came out, like these two singles into Pulling Teeth. It's just like, yeah, and then we're gonna do our like doo-wop kind of thing, you know, like our
versatility,
literally not like the band who does the song Buddy Holly, but like Buddy Holly type kind of it. I can picture them doing that type of music video to this song. Mm. And I just like that departure of, yeah, we're a lot of things now.
Yeah.
it is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Starts becoming more of an eclectic album, I think, you know, or as far as like all their writing, they're taking departures and, you know, on their music. I enjoy it. I think I like the song. It's a more like laid back vibe, but it certainly has a more 90s like,
yeah,
almost fastball kind of a vibe in some regard. Or who else? Some of the other bands that are kind of happening at this point,
yeah,
you know, prepping us for like the 2000s, yep, you know. So yeah.
Then you get into Basket Case, and the more time I have to think about Basket Case over the years, I think it's potentially one of the greatest rock punk songs probably ever written. Like the most genre bending, like most easily accessible for everyone, for mass hordes. Because this song, dude, like everyone knows this song.
Yeah.
And it's really uniquely shaped. It's the downstroking at the, like he just, for him to start that song by himself in such a, what is it about Billy Joel Armstrong.
Joel Armstrong.
And his, I mean, like he writes hooks. He's got really good hooks, and the way the notes he chooses and the lines and the cadence he chooses, like this is, I mean, I guess if you probably type in Green Day on Apple Music, I'm guessing this is the number one song for them, right? Like, I'm sorry, I don't know what's happening. There we go. I bet this is probably the most listened to song, wouldn't you say?
I would say so. I mean, I think it's the most pure like Green Day song of all time. Like if you want to get like single talking and punk aesthetic, like I just think that, I don't know, like that's it, right? I don't know, man, there's something about that sort of run of that melody that he has while just like downstroking and like very aggressive like 4/4 timing. There's something about it where it's so relaxing, but it's so chaotic. And it's everything.
And usually I would get sick of these songs, like the overplayed song. But like I'm somehow just not sick. I could listen to this song right now and just be like, well, I love the song.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love this song. It was one that we played my high school band. We had to play this song.
Of course.
Right? Like it was so much fun. It's such a fun song. I think that's all I can really say. Like man, did we love fucking playing this song. God, it was good.
And then right into bass line led she. Yeah. I mean, that's another bass line you had to learn.
Ding, 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 ding. It's such an interesting way to start a song, but at the same time, it's also the opposite of the way they just started Basket Case.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It's kind of the same thing.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I think that finally they're just doing things that they feel are creative and stepping outside of like the punk. Pigeonholing.
I don't know. But also not in the modern day, like, here's the formula of pigeonholing. Yeah. Right. They're just like, why don't you start this song? Okay, we haven't had a song started on bass yet. And then, hey, what if you just sang and play guitar to start this song? And then what if the drums, boom, started this one? I mean, they just don't care. Mm-hmm. There's no formula to this. They're like, we're just gonna, that sounds cool. I don't know. And that's when you get these mega albums, when the band has no preconceived notions coming in and no thoughts of like, what will people think about it? They're just like, we're going to do this.
Yeah. And it's almost like they did think about it. And like, because the structure of the album itself is just like three and then radio hit and then like two and then radio hit. And then they take a break again and then two and then radio hit, you know, I think that it's overall a perfect kind of track listing.
Yeah.
That's important to me when listening to a band is like the layout of what song comes mm-hmm. next and what song flows into what they end with. You know, it's really important if it's going to be a great album and not just an album with some songs that I like off of it.
You know? This is back when albums were albums.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Now it's like, make sure the single's the first song and we'll call it good.
Everything else you can just kind of
who cares?
Whatever.
Make sure you've got enough. We've got at least enough to call it an album so we can release the three songs we actually want out there to the public.
Yes.
So, yeah.
I got to hit this just so you hear it. I actually like this song quite a bit. Sassafras Roots. Mm. It's a little repetitive, but it's a great, like the bass line. Like, ding. I love songs like this where they're just fast playing. This song is 2 minutes long. Great, found a great chorus. Here's some fast music. Let's go.
I mean, also you just played that, and all I had in my mind was an intro to a movie where this group of friends are just hanging out and trying to figure themselves out and trying to, you know, bang girls along the way. It's just those '90s movies like Mallrats where they had those punk rock intros, Biodome, you know. There's something about that aesthetic that I really like. And this, I think we said in Biodome, like, it's kind of getting tired a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's a vibe for me. And I think that most of these songs you could just put in the beginning of a kind of coming of age comedy and call it good.
Completely. Yeah. Or a montage scene or something of those of that era.
Yeah. Yeah.
I got to tell you though, When I Come Around was the song that captured me. When we heard it in the basement, that was the song that I went, I've never heard anything like this before. It was slower than the rest. It was a little more mid-tempo. Something about that guitar tone in this song and his cadence and his voice. This song did it. This is the one that brought me into Green Day. I remember seeing have you ever seen the music video for this one?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's the one where they're walking
and just...
Yeah.
It's just them walking kind of through
like day subway.
And
night.
Yeah. Like different places. And it's like they're walking on their old stomping grounds kind of thing, you know?
And it's forever. It's just in my brain. Yeah. Them walking, a sideways shot of him, and he reaches up to a payphone and just pulls it out and it lets it fall.
Yeah.
Like it was just like, it was so cool.
It's punk rock, dude.
It's so cool. I love When I Come Around. Like I still love this song.
It's my favorite song on the album. I think it's just like the whole song is just a feeling, you know. Mm-hmm. The whole song is just a feeling, especially when it gets to that bridge of, you know, just really just picking those notes of those chords, and somehow it feels like it slows you down. And I think during the music video, it even does that where, or it actually, it's like it does like a sped up thing during that part of the music video. But for some reason, the song seems slower to me. I don't know. It's very interesting. And I think the whole song is just a feeling that you get like when you listen to this song. It's hard to explain. Yeah.
It is one that I would skip if it was on the radio.
Yeah, of course.
But if I'm listening to this album all the way through, I'm obviously not skipping the song. But it is probably my least favorite of the singles.
Cool.
Yeah,
cool.
Just because it's so on the radio every single day.
Of course.
Yeah.
It's not their fault at all.
No.
Yeah.
What about the next one? My note on Coming Clean was short but amazing. I think this is the shortest song on the album. Yeah, 1:30.
Yeah.
I found out what it takes to be a man. Now mom and dad will never understand. Yeah, he's just like 1:30 following up a huge radio hit, and you're just like, okay.
Yeah.
I get it. This is awesome.
Yeah, they're gonna it's like a trick, you know. They'll draw you in with these radio hits, you know, or other people. I think that's why this is such an important album, is because it does that. They're drawing you in with all these radio hits, and then the person who buys the album for the radio hits is then going to inevitably hear the songs surrounding the radio
yes,
hits.
Of course they are.
And then learn more about the genre, you know, and that's, yeah.
I think that's why it's so influential,
you know,
the whole album is.
I think so too. And like the people who are original fans are going to hate that because they're bringing yuppies into their thing. But at the same time, if you're a musician, you want to expand, you want people to understand,
yep.
you know.
Yep.
So,
yep.
I don't know.
Next song, same, Amenia Sleepus. It's like 1:40, another yeah. punk one. In the end, though, in like FOD, I think FOD might have the best lyrics in it. That's the one that starts off. It's the last song on the album, technically.
Yeah.
Here, play it for you. Something's on my mind. It's the acoustic guitar.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But at the end, did you? I don't know if you actually read through the lyrics of this because I didn't catch this as a kid. You know, he says, "I've had this burning in my guts now for so long, my belly's aching to say."
Mm-hmm.
And then, been in a turn and then a been. He says, "You're just a fuck. I can't explain it because I think you suck. I'm taking pride in telling you to fuck off and die." FOD stands for fuck off and die. Like, I never knew that as a child, that's what he was saying. But those are my favorite lyrics. I'm taking pride in telling you to fuck off and die.
Yeah.
Love it. I love the punk rock of that, man.
Yeah. I mean, like, again, I don't know. They're like, this, talking about the guitar tone that they have on this album is very, there's a band called The Bronx, and I'm not sure if they came before or after. They're still going to this day, but it's just like, it's very, not dissonant. What's the other one?
Resonant.
No, it's very happy chords. It's
okay.
Very like, and The Bronx, I think is a, like obviously a New York, punk band, but it just makes me think of California, all of those kinds of chord progressions that they have.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously Ramones kind of influence, mm-hmm. but specifically the guitar tone is a lot of The Bronx for me. And I love how abrasive it is, but it's not like so much that it's taking over
yeah.
the song.
At oh, all. Totally.
Yeah.
It's like the perfect amount. Somebody stood there for 4 hours just going, crum.
Yes.
Come, same chord.
All just, right. What mic come. Goes good with it? Yeah, they got to figure so much shit out. Like, what cab goes good with this Marshall that you're coming
yeah,
out of?
Yeah, and they nailed it.
Yeah,
yeah.
And obviously, you got the secret song. Obviously, you guys listen to it.
A lot of fun. I mean, like again, I just
it's pretty cool singing.
I love how it's I love albums where you get that kind of behind the scenes sneak peek kind of thing. At like, it was fun to make.
Yeah.
And
like, this was kind of fun.
Like, I was listening to it with my buddy Camden on the way back from somewhere. And what was I going to say? It was, they're just having a great time. But also, like, in certain songs, you can hear, like, Trey Cool.
They laugh or something, or the count off or something.
Yeah, you can hear him, like, go, hey. way or something in the mix. And I,
in Longview, there's a
yes.
Wonder what you will. Somebody goes,
yeah,
like yeah. Just in the background.
I and that's what also makes me think that they just record it live. But yeah, I love that. I love like because you feel a part of the band. You feel yes. like you're almost even at a concert just of them playing the song.
Yeah, totally.
You know, I love that kind of thing.
They had fun in the moment of recording the song and they left it in, and mm-hmm. that's what makes it cool.
Yeah.
I followed my Green Day fandom. I heard this album. I went back and got Kerplunk. Liked it a lot. And then I bought the next one that came out, which was Insomniac. That had, they were on top of the world. That had Brain Stew in it. You know, Danny. And I did enjoy that album. But everything after that, I've not been a Green Day fan since. Once they started on kind of the political journey, that was sort of it for me. But I respect everything they've done. I think they're an iconic band. And because of Dookie, which is my favorite Green Day album, they're in the ethers of rock and roll bands of the 90s, 2000s. You know?
I mean, I'd say American Idiot for me is pretty, because just that era of music is really, that's when I was in high school, mostly like middle school going into high school. Mm-hmm. That is a special place in my heart for me. And I think that's kind of even a classic nowadays, but nowadays, yeah, I don't know. Yeah. And I'm with you though. This is my first real listen through the whole thing, but, they've always been there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. They've always been there. They were at the beginning, and you always hear the stories of like, oh, yep, they're what everybody wanted to be, because they were just the band that was got in the van and went and showed up at places and said, can we play? And everybody wanted to mimic that and be that. And they came all the way full circle to, you know, the stardom that happened before American Idiot and how that just blew up, you know, and they became just larger than life. I mean, they were just a worldwide act, man. Yeah. And it's that you can't have any, if you're in music or if you're around music, if you're a musician, if you like whatever it is, there's no world that you can live in and be like, and feel like they didn't earn it.
Yeah.
Or like they aren't a, they suck. I don't respect Green Day. You don't respect Green Day? Congratulations. You've let everyone know that they shouldn't respect you. Yeah. So good.
Doogie for me is like maybe even like a fun, cool movie. In a way where, like, I think a great listen, like, you just have listen parties for it. And, we're getting together just to listen to Dookie together.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's one of those albums for me where it's just, like, I would love to attend a party like that, and I can see why people have done that. Like, listening to it with my buddy was the perfect way to watch it.
This would be like you saying, hey, you guys want to come over? We're gonna grill. We're going to hang in the backyard, play some bags. Summer's here. It's beautiful weather out. This would be like an album you just hit play on.
Track one, Dookie. Let's listen to all of
Track one, Dookie. Go.
Done.
Yeah. Well, we love you guys. Let us know. We're obviously going to keep up with the album, so we'd love to hear any of your thoughts on some classic ones that we might need to cover. You know, there's a million of them we can get to, so.
Absolutely. I'm dying for the time we do Gorillaz self-titled.
Well, I mean, I think your choice is coming up next. So.
Okay.
And I'm still wondering, like, maybe we should try it. I don't know. Maybe we should try playing it along and having it just be very subtly in the background. I don't know. I don't ever want to get flagged for that stuff.
Yeah.
It'd be nice.
It would be nice to have, like, some zips in there. Otherwise, I mean, we can always listen to it and not have it playing during the actual recording. We can at least listen
like
to it.
Like, we're hearing it.
We're hearing it, but...
It cut out some dead air of us going, I like this part.
Listen to this part.
Listen.
Dead air. Oh, yeah, dude. No, you're right. You're right. No, yeah, yeah. Totally.
That part where you did that thing, that was a great thing.
Faded it out. All right, we'll catch you next time. Goodbye.
Thank you, guys.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.